A couple came to see me with their dog. It was pacing and sniffing, and its ears were constantly on alert. They were gentle and caring folks, and you could tell they tried everything. So here's what was said. They said to me, "We were prescribed fluoxetine when we first got her." And I asked, "When did you get her?" "3 years ago," they said. "When did you notice it wasn't working?" They looked at each other and said, "About a year and a half ago." "And were you working with a professional at the time?" "No, we hired a trainer first. That didn't help. But the vet gave us the meds." "Okay, so do you find this alarming?" "Because you should." That moment stayed with me, and my warning systems went off, because there's a couple of things going on here, because there's something wrong with this scenario. This dog who received medication after a training program, well, that doesn't help. There was no structured interpretation of that behavior, no structure, caregiver coaching. The medication was renewed quietly year after year, not because anyone failed, but because the process surrounding the medication is under-resourced. What was missing wasn't effort or intention. What was missing was the behavioral ecosystem, a way to see how the dog was doing across time, across context, and with human support. When medication is introduced in isolation, without tracking, without caregiver involvement, without co-regulation, we lose the ability to understand what's really changing or not changing. It's that slight pause, that moment where the dog is in the middle of uncertainty, where it's considering options, where it's thinking about how do I move forward? Do I protect myself or am I okay? Do I need guidance? Those moments, what we call the white pathway moments, that slight pause is the intervention moment, that moment where we can step in and help the dog. And that was just missed. And what medication does is often, depending on the case, can often help those white pathway moments happen more often. And so all the time that the dog was initially on the medication and all those white pathway moments that would have happened were missed. Okay. That white pathway moment is observable. It's a glance, it's a hesitation, it's a flicker of reachability. When a dog is uncertain and may respond with biting or barking or jumping, but we can reach it before it goes there. But the dog may decide to look for guidance. But this dog had never been supported through those moments. No one noticed when they appeared. Medication might have softened the intensity, but it didn't have anything to stabilize it. No structure around it. No way to build forward on it. Had the caregiver been included, had the rhythm and the relationship been fostered, medication might have helped for a time. And maybe it wouldn't still be needed when these people came to me. It might have been possible to wean the dog off that medication. Now, if this conversation resonates with you, and what I'm talking about is what you'd like to hear more of, please let me know in the comments. Let me know with a like, or if you'd like to subscribe, it's so simple. You just press that subscribe button and it would mean the world. Thank you so much. Now, in many cases, medication is being offered earlier than before. It's becoming more normalized to go to your vet, ask for medication, and get a prescription. Sometimes it's in the first consult. You might go in and say, you know, my dog has separation anxiety or something like that, and your vet's going to give you medication. But here's the challenge. First of all, diagnosing separation anxiety has been noted to be very broad symptoms. And in several cases that I've had, it wasn't separation anxiety at all, as we've gone to observe the behavior. And what's more important is the medication, just like us, the medication for separation anxiety, it is one type of medication, but it doesn't handle other issues. So once we know it's not separation anxiety, it opens up other potential medication options for the veterinarian. So this is not a criticism. It's a sign that everyone involved in the dog's care is looking for relief. The caregiver is overwhelmed. The vet may be facing, you know, the urgency and a large caseload and worry for the dog. No one wants to see the dog suffer. But when there's no co-regulation between the caregiver and the dog, no rhythm, no relationship, no looking for guidance and knowing that caregiver is there for the dog and can guide that dog back from the brink of going into a threat response, we don't know what's helping. We don't know what's going on, and we certainly can't support that dog through a medication protocol. And over time, that leaves the caregiver stuck, not because the vet was wrong, but because there was nothing around the dog to move the dog forward. So what should occur before medication is even discussed? This is where a behaviorist really shines, that professional that can come in and observe behaviors very quickly at an expert level, be able to show you how to track them as a caregiver, and then be able to analyze what they're seeing and be able to provide that to the veterinarian, who can then make a diagnosis, a proper diagnosis. In that time, the behaviorist can start to talk to you about what's needed to support that behavior, what's going to be required when the dog is on that medication protocol. So what we need is clarity in the dog's behavior patterns. And I've talked to patterns in the past, but patterns are really, really key to see when the dog is responding to a threat, when the dog is feeling unsafe, when the dog is looking for guidance and not receiving it. We need a caregiver who understands how to emotionally support the dog. I always say that many dogs need a support person, much like many humans need a support dog. Observational things like deep quality sleep, recovery time, even self-grooming, areas like this can be tracked, and they can be tracked every day. So a behaviorist can guide you through what to track and also provide feedback. And this is required on a daily basis for about 3 to 4 weeks, ideally. And then that information can be provided to the veterinarian. And then we also want to look for moments of hesitation, those white pathway moments that I call, that moment between when the dog is deciding, do I need to respond to a threat, or do I need guidance? Am I a little uncertain? Am I not sure about which way to go? And that's a great intervention point. So the white pathway is very important to understand. When these things are tracked and interpreted, where we can go with that is to look more at systems than symptoms. And the minute that we look at the systems, think about an ecosystem around a dog, the sooner that we can understand the ecosystem around the dog, what we're able to do is to better understand why that behavior is emerging and what we can do to help it. Now, one of the tools we can use is medication, but it's not all that we use. And we know this. This is a standard protocol that's when we put a dog on medication that we always have it with behavior modification. But if we do that pre-tracking of the behavior, then during the work that we're doing with the vet and deciding on the medication is one part. Then we move you to track how we're progressing with work you can do. So it's very targeted, strategic work, because we now know where the undesirable behavior that you're seeing is emerging from. And with that, a plan can be developed, a very, very strategic plan. So you're not doing a whole pile of things that every other dog trainer has ever taught you. You're actually getting to effective work, getting the dog to a place that you've never seen before, a dog that is safe, a dog that is comfortable, right? So this isn't about doing more. It's about doing differently, so that dogs and their people have more than just a prescription. They have a plan. When we talk about medication and behavior, it's not about being before or against. It's about asking, have we set the environment for it to be effective? Do you see what I mean? And is that caregiver part of the plan? So if you're a caregiver watching this now, you have to be part of the plan. You have to be able to relate to your dog, to guide your dog in a way that you might not have done before. If your dog is new to you, it's even more important. And this is where our behaviors can really come in and lend a hand. You need to learn how to communicate and have a dialogue with your dog where you're able to ask questions and your dog can respond back with a yes, no, or maybe, and then engage the dog in responding effectively to that answer. And it's about ensuring your responses as a caregiver, good, bad, or ugly, are understood on how they're reaching the dog, what that impact is, and to be able to be accountable for it, to change, if necessary, how you're responding to the dog who is feeling unsafe. This is shared work across professions, across roles, whether you're a caregiver or a behaviorist or trainer. It's about coming together and being a team for that dog. The more we observe, the more we track, the more we include the human-animal relationship in our interpretation, the better outcome decisions there will be. Medication is powerful, but power without structure can't support long-term change. I want to thank you for being here. Professional, a behaviorist, a trainer, a vet, just know you're not alone. Please leave a comment. You can or reach out to me privately if you'd like. We all want the same thing here. Relief that last, right? Behavior that reflects healing. And dogs that are not just quiet. Please subscribe, share, like, make a comment. Let me know if this work helps you. I'd really like to hear from you. It would mean so much. Thanks again. Bye for now.
Thank you.